We negotiated a different language for our relationship study. And I'm working on the project for Alaska.
I just put a sign up list up there.
Okay, Select Committee doesn't have an official chairperson anymore, now that Brad has left us. So I just put that on the agenda. I thought you guys might want to nominate a new chairperson to kind of lead the subcommittee efforts. But I don't know if we want to wait another 5 minutes for more people to show up.
I think Dan O'Grady, who's on back, okay, and this is kind of like a subcommittee back, right?
Yeah.
He's District 5, I mean, it's like...
It sounds like you have a nomination.
Oh, God.
I think you'd be great at it.
I'll have to abstain from voting.
We don't care how you vote. Tell the rest of us our vote.
That's what I was going to say.
You can vote, though.
I guess the only duties at this point, the only thing lacking, I know you're taking your agenda a lot with this project we're working on, but if there's any other topics that, the subcommittee wanted to tackle, then, the chairperson can kind of lead that effort as far as taking requests for, topics and then, having me send it out as part of the agenda.
You want to say when you're not there, you get nothing for stuff, right?
I did that to Steve Sitton for the...
Did you?
For the 83 protected
audience. That was you, huh? Well, he was saying bad things about somebody. I didn't realize that was you.
Several people told me I won't be able to make it tonight, so I don't know if we'll get too many more people coming in. But other than establishing a chairperson for the subcommittee, of course, coming back again with our feasibility study, kind of a progress report, so to speak, as far as developing our initial project alternatives and screening criteria for, again, looking at all the different options and trying to get down to the three or so that might be the most feasible to look at in more detail. So Mike's come down again and he's brought some other friends from the project team.
So just for those of you who may not have met in the past, Mike Fernandez from the Sacramento office of GDI Consultants. And from GDI, from our Bakersfield office, we have Ron Ide, who joined us. And then Boobro here, and I guess not here in San Luis, but from San Luis Obispo, Paul Sorensen.
Never seen him.
And then Tim Cleve as well.
Never seen.
And I don't know, maybe for the sake of Ron, if you have, I don't know if you've met everyone, if you could just go around and introduce themselves real quickly. So refresh my memory and help Ron out.
That's Rover City Council, John Hamm.
Sue Love, North County Washington, alternate on the RAC.
Ray Allen, RAC.
Bob Rose, North County Water Resources Forum. Take it. And County Planning.
I'm Dan O'Grady, District 5 representative to the Water Resources Advisory Committee.
Okay. I'm Cliff Smith, I'm Legislative Assistant to Supervisor Harry Elder.
Well, thank you. And also, there's a sign on the list here. So before you leave, Courtney, I appreciate it.
Mr. Dan, I'm sorry.
I
got it. No.
So what we're going to do is step through how we're defining and refining what the project looks like at this point in time, based upon some of the feedback that we had from the last meeting and how the project is starting to shape up. Take a look again at the project goal and approach that we've gone through several times already. Take a look at the difference between just groundwater recharge versus water banking. And that's what I'd ask Ron to provide some insight on, the differences, because there's a lot of water banking that goes on in Kern County, and Ron is involved in, so that will give us some insight on that. Some information and background on the water supply options and availability. Taking a look at groundwater recharge capacity and what that means to this project. And then taking a look at conveyance costs or conveyance capacity costs to provide some sense of the range of the range of costs that might be associated with taking water from one location and moving it across the basin to another location for a recharge. So the project goal again is to determine the feasibility of water banking in the Paso Robles Basin. And again, one of the things, a couple of the items that would help determine that piece. The ability to use the unallocated portion of the state water project water, the ability to store and recover water in the groundwater basin, and the ability to deliver banked water to an end user. Whoever that end user may be, whether they're within the basin or at some other location. Again, the project approach, we're going to take a look at initially the technical feasibility, which includes looking at hydrogeologic considerations or hydrogeologic feasibility, as well as engineering feasibility. And after we've identified what several of these projects may look like, then begin to address if there's other issues or other considerations that we need to think about, whether those are environmental, institutional, regulatory, or also looking for funding partners or having other project partners as well. So with that, I was going to turn it over to Ron here to dive into the differences or similarities between groundwater recharge and water banking.
Well, I guess to some extent, you know, it depends on who you're talking to and their definitions, but for purposes of our work, I'll give you the distinction that we're trying to make. Groundwater recharge that is not as distinguished from what we would call water banking would be something that would be exercised for the betterment of the basin or the area where the water is being recharged, and there would be no managed recovery of that water. In other words, whatever the overlying uses and recovery methods are, this simply helps, you know, provide the supply to sustain that existing development, and it's purely local. The benefits are local to that basin. They don't extend beyond that area. And there's no water accounting as we would have in contrast in water banking, where we're not keeping track of, you know, how many acre feet are in this account or that account. It's simply, again, basically for the common good and betterment of the basin generally. And the funding then, or whatever it takes to bring that water in and do the recharge, would be somehow have to be funded then locally as well. So all the costs and the benefits are in the local area. When we talk about water banking, it at least has the connotation, and so we're kind of relying on that in making this distinction, of partnering with someone. That someone is often, you know, outside of the area, or at least the immediate area where the recharge is going on. That partner is typically someone who isn't similarly situated physically to do banking, you know, in their own world, in their own immediate, in their own backyard, and are looking for someone who is so situated to partner with to help regulate a variable supply and basically buy an insurance policy for the dry year. And I apologize if, you know, I'm telling you things that, you know, are kind of old news to you, but sometimes it's worthwhile just revisiting just some basic definitions and how we're using those terms. So if you'll bear with me. And in the water banking, we are establishing accounts where if I'm a partner and I'm investing funds, so I'm helping to offset or eliminate perhaps local funding, and I'm bringing, as a partner, bringing the money to the table, then I'm establishing an account where there's specific number of acre feet are being kept track of for that banking partner. There are potentially impacts not only on the positive side when water is in storage, but at least potentially on a temporary basis when water is withdrawn or recovered, that all have to be considered in the total arrangement. Now, the water banking, one, it provides perhaps a mechanism, assuming there's a suitable partner for the relationship, to help fund in whole or in part infrastructure that might not otherwise be built. If that infrastructure, to the extent it's not required to satisfy the obligations of the banking relationship, perhaps that infrastructure then is available for other local benefits that can accrue, whether it be you know, when water is not being spread, you know, maybe there's an opportunity locally, maybe there isn't. I'm just throwing this out generically without, at this point, and Michael will talk a little bit more about the specifics of this basin that we're focusing on and some of the realities of it, and I'm kind of looking at it from a little higher altitude more generally. Now, the banking partner can bring both money to the table to help make a project work, and there are instances and real life cases where the arrangements have not been a balanced exchange where I bring 1 acre foot to you and you give me back 1 acre foot at some future time, but rather maybe I bring 2 acre feet and you give me one back. So net over the long term, there's water left in the basin as part of the payment, if you will, as opposed to just being a financial relationship. So it could be one or the other or some combination. So that's a pretty long-winded comparison of just, you know, basically looking at things locally versus partnering with someone. And obviously that's a more complex arrangement institutionally to put together as well. So are there any questions or did I confuse? Hopefully I didn't do that. Okay.
Well, one of the things that we're looking at is we're going to try to put to use the state water project water available to San Luis Obispo County. That's initially what we're looking at. And there's really two options for the source of the water. One is a treated water option, which would come through Colonial Pass Water Treatment Plant and might be accessible along the coastal branch of the aqueduct. And then the second source would be a raw water supply, which would be available prior to going through the treatment plant. But that would be that source would originate back at this location rather than somewhere along the pipeline. So we're going to take a look at a couple of different options that may present themselves for both the treated water and raw water options. Treated water options, what we're really looking at is the method of the recharge that may be available or more appropriate for recharging with treated water. We have recharge basins, stream recharge, agricultural inlet recharge, M&I recharge opportunities, and injection wells. For as far as conveyance and distribution for this project, it would all start probably at some length along the coastal branch aqueduct. The recharge facilities match the recharge methods as far as recharge basins would be in basins or ponds, streams would be in rivers or streams. Ag in lieu, we would use the existing agricultural distribution system and tie into that, understanding that there's maybe some concerns about treated water into the ag in the distribution system. Or we also have an M&I distribution system. Since we are using treated water, that is an option. And another option would be aquifer storage and recovery wells, wells that would be used to both inject water into the groundwater basin and recover at a later date. As far as the physical facilities needed to recover the banked water, the recharge water, for both the recharge basins and the stream recharge, it would consist either of new or existing wells. For the in-lieu operations, we actually wouldn't physically recover that water that was banked, because the benefit of that would be that the surface water was provided to the users in lieu of groundwater pumping, so the basin is recovering during that time when they are not pumping. And then for injection wells, we would use the same wells that were used to inject the water to recover the water. Again, are there any questions as we go?
Yeah, what is M&I?
Municipal and industrial, I'm sorry.
Okay. And then that dashed green line on the other slide, what was the aqueduct and the pipeline?
Yeah.
Is that existing?
That is the existing coastal branch that extends from the state water, California aqueduct down here, up through San Luis Obispo County and continues all the way down to San Luis Obispo County.
Thank you.
But I thought it was fully
allocated. There is some available capacity, both in the treatment plant and in the aqueduct itself, but it's small. There's two things that really limit the opportunities of using treated water to as a banking component. One is the capacity at the water treatment plant. Two is the available capacity at the pipeline itself. A third thing is time, because even though there may be available capacity right now, as the demand builds up in Santa Barbara County, that capacity may be utilized for other uses. And then another item would be just institutional complexity to try to work out an arrangement. Maybe more complicated to do that than to use other our raw water supply.
Which agencies are using that pipeline right now?
That belongs to Central Coast Water Authority. So they own the treatment plant and the coastal branch, except for 11%. I think San Luis Obispo County owns, I believe, 11% of the capacity.
Mm-hmm. There's several subcontractors through San Luis Obispo County, and then there's several that take water in San Barbara County. So the Morro Bay is takes state water, Gizmo Beach, the county takes some for their facilities, and several others.
So that all comes out of that?
Right now we have a contractual right to 4,830 acre feet of water per year, and it's divvied up between those specific cities and agencies that take that water. And they did a capacity study and found, even though they designed it a certain way, there's physically they could pump more water through there. It's not a lot more, but that's one of the components. Like, we had basically the subcontractors or the people who take that state water right now have indicated that if there's any excess capacity, then we're going to want.
But we, San Luis Obispo County, have right to 25, and we're using 4.5. So is the pipeline sized for that 25 or the size for the 4?
No, from Pulling Pass Water Treatment Plant. It's only sized for the 4830.
That's San Luis Obispo County's portion of the total capacity of that.
So since it's treated water, you'd have
you were going to try to fully utilize anything more than what is remaining in that available capacity right now, which I don't know if you do they have a number yet on what that additional capacity may be, but it's small. It may be like 10% of the capacity of the whole pipeline. But I don't think it's a huge number.
It's some type of fraction of the 25%.
Yeah, it's less than what could be used to fully develop a project with the remaining portion of 25,000.
And then also in the treated water, you look at dechlorinating before.
It would depend on the use. Because if you would use the treated water, you could easily put that into an M&I, a municipal or urban inland program, or into an injection well, an ASR well, aquifer storage and recovery, because you need to use treated water to put it down into the aquifer system and then you would recover that.
But not in the other uses, it's strictly recharge.
Yeah, I think discharging treated water into a stream for recharge, I think there would be a whole slew of complexities associated with that. Any other questions? Yes.
In utilizing the existing pipeline, did you look at when deliveries might be made? That is, when deliveries are down, when normal deliveries are down, would that not increase the capacity of the line to take some of that excess water?
It would provide additional capacity, but I don't know that the additional infrastructure investments would warrant exploring that at any great detail, because I don't think it's going to be that significant of when there is that incremental increase in capacity. Because one of the things that we're going to be looking to do, you know, for the state, the contract you had is a total of 25,000 acre feet per year at the instantaneous delivery rate of 35 CFS. So the water that the county has access to from the state is pretty much fairly well defined what that pattern that they can get that on. And so in order to take full advantage of that water, we want to have facilities that are available to make the best use of that water when it's available most of the time. So I think for investment in infrastructure, I don't know that you know, a small increment of additional capacity would provide that opportunity.
Is the 25,000 acre feet available at Colonial Pass?
Depends on the year type. And actually, we'll take a look at that.
That was my point.
In a couple of slides.
If there's excess water at Colonial Pass, and if the deliveries are down, where instead of getting 100%, you're getting 40% or 60%, whatever it is, by definition, your capacity in your pipeline is down because your deliveries are down.
But remember that we're just talking about, it's just the San Luis Obispo County portion. Santa Barbara County, they have the remaining 90% of the capacity in the pipeline.
So we'd only have 10% of any additional capacity that might be available.
Yeah, and I don't know if the county pays for it on a percent of total capacity or if they pay for a number of CFS.
Number.
Okay, so they.
So if the deliveries were to Santa Barbara, then that might change the equation because that'd be 90%.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow.
Well, Santa Barbara is a player, right?
That's what I was driving at.
Yeah, they may be. Right, they may be a banking partner in some formulations of a project. And so, yes, there may be options to incorporate recharge or exchanges with Santa Barbara County, but that may or may not include banking water in the basin and then returning it to them. That may just be utilizing available supply that San Luis Obispo County has at Colonial Pass.
That's kind of where
okay. Right. But that's not groundwater banking feasibility in the basin, but that's another management option.
Yeah, if the end is to get water to
right.
A, there
right.
are different ways of getting it there,
right.
banking being one.
Right. And that's correct. And you know, for this project we're looking at, you know, feasibility of putting water into the ground and taking it out. That would be another project that would be explored through your water resources management strategies or integrated plans, but it would be something that, you know, you could identify here as an option. Does that answer your question?
I think so. Okay. I'm not smart enough to know it yet.
So then we have the raw water options. Again, we have the same methods of recharge identified here, but the point of origin of the water is from a Colonial Pass treatment plant rather than from along the coastal branch. Recharge facilities are the same, recovery facilities are the same, but you see, because this is a raw water supply, M&I, in-lieu recharge, and injection wells are not identified as applicable here unless there is additional treatment that would be applied to treat the water in order to put it into either the distribution system or to inject it into the well. So that was the idea behind this, is just to get some discrimination between the potential opportunity and the treated water. Now we're going to take a look at a little bit of well, what do we have to try to size what this facility may be. Two of the factors that may contribute to the size of the recharge project would be, well, what is the available water supply for banking, and also what is the capacity to recharge water in the basin. So we're going to take a look at that. This graph shows the long-term water supply availability south of the delta for a 2025 condition. So this is a result of a planning model run by the Department of Water Resources called CalSIM, representing a 2025 level of demand with a whole slew of operational assumptions. But what they have done is come up with a chart that shows the percent of time when deliveries will be made south of the delta. So what I have done is said, okay, well, we're interested in San Luis Obispo County and 25,000 acre feet that's available to them. And you can see on the left here, annual delivery goes from 0 to 25,000 or 30,000 acre feet, but we're capped at 25,000. And then we have the percent of years across the bottom here, and is that all in focus?
Yeah,
that's more, I guess, a little bit on the bottom. The percent of years of when a certain level of delivery is available. So in wetter years, on the right hand side here, we can see that 25,000 acre feet is available in about 30% of the years. And as we move to the left, we get to drier and drier conditions, and you can see the percent chance or the amount of water that can be delivered slowly starts to decline as we get to drier and drier conditions. One of the things that we've just discussed is that there is already about 5,000 acre feet of water that's been allocated and assigned from this contract for those 11 contractors that the county is providing water to. So that is an existing use that's not available for banking. It's a higher priority use than any water that would be available for banking. So potential supplies for banking would fall into this area through here. So if we take a look at a couple of different what this curve means to us. In 80% of the years, about 16,000 acre feet per year is available to the county. So out of that long simulation period that they did, about 80% of the years, the county would get 16,000 acre feet per year.
Or more.
I'm sorry?
Or more.
Or more, yeah. Right, at least, yeah, so you can see, excellent point, that they would get at least 16,000 acre feet per year. And so, what that tells us is that after the 5,000 acre feet is available for banking, or 4,800, it is, I'm sorry, provided to the M&I purveyors, there's about 1,000 acre feet per month available for banking. So in 80% of the years, there would be about 1,000 acre feet available, 1,000 acre feet per month available for water banking. In about 50% of the years, there's about 22,000 acre feet per year available, less than 5,000. So we're looking at about 1,500 acre feet per month available for banking in 50% of the years. And then about 30% of the years, when there's full delivery to San Luis Obispo County, there's about 1,700 acre feet a month available for banking. So this gives us some sense of the sizes of facilities that we would need to bank the water in the ground, to convey the water to some banking location. Typically what would happen is that in these weather years is when we're going to be putting water or recharging water, and it's in these drier years, and we don't know exactly where this break point is, it's in these drier years that we would probably be taking or recovering that water. So are there any questions on this?
Let me see if I understand.
Okay.
This sort of assumes that we're going to take the other 20,000 feet and essentially use it for banking. We're not going to allow Morro Bay or Pismo to take another 1,000 acre feet because we're going to.
Right. This is if we were just going to size the bank based upon their remaining supply that's available to them, this would be a time series or represent what those quantities look like.
But it obviously couldn't get any bigger because we don't have that lot.
Right. We couldn't get larger than 25,000 acre feet using only San Luis Obispo County's water. If there was another source of water, whether it's Article 21 water or someone else wanted you to bank water in your basin, then that supply could piggyback on top of this supply and increase the number of years when more water would be available to bank.
I mean, this chart tells me that, I mean, it looks good, we could be banking water 95% of the time, at least a gallon.
Right. But.
So, but what's the but?
Well, actually, we'll see the button.
We'll see the button later. Okay.
Article 21, yeah.
Oh,
that is. Ron, man, I don't know if you have, if you're up on an Article 21 or not, but that's an additional water that would be available because it is not requested in the individual year by other contractors. So
it's on a year-to-year basis.
Yeah, so it's on a year-to-year and availability basis.
Okay, so we went really wide up north, and then they're spilling out a reservoir, so they offer to send it down the line instead of letting it fill.
Gee, isn't it nice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just have to pay for the cost of getting it.
But you're paying more just for the water cost then, because you've already covered the capital costs of the facilities for the water and then move it down. So it is, I think it's a little bit less expensive than your initial water.
Am I correct then that we really could not expand the deliveries to various entities along the way, given the size of the pipeline, that for all intent and purposes, the pipeline itself is maxed?
You're talking about the treated water?
The treated water now.
Yeah, because that was the decision that was made by San Luis Obispo County to purchase a certain quantity of capacity.
So the only way to take additional dedicated service would be through another pipeline, would be
from that location, yeah. Ron, did you have a question?
No, I it was just a comment, just another way of saying what we're talking about here is that this represents the maximum amount of water that would be available for banking, you know, when it made sense to use it at a different level. That's another question, but basically this represents the maximum amount available under the county's entitlement without, again, as you say, adding any other increment, which could be occasional availability of Article 21 water would add to the use.
But it also doesn't take into account people like Morro Bay or something wanting additional water.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right, but then there'd be an endless of other questions to physically deliver that water to them.
Yeah, that was the point I was trying to make, is that Morro Bay wanted more water, but really, given the kind of the limits on the pipeline, we really couldn't provide it. So this is pretty static. This isn't going to change.
Right.
There's 10% available.
Yeah.
So maybe there's 5,500, maybe.
Just from hooking it up a little bit, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if it was percentage. I think Courtney said it was they purchased a certain amount of capacity. I said percent. But
right.
I think it's capacity, not the percent of the total capacity.
Yeah, right now our contract with CTWA is we can, you know, flow 4830 through the pipeline, and they can flow their amount at 44,000, something like that. That's what our contracts say right now. They did a flow test, capacity study of the treatment plant and the pipeline. They found that, oh, look, we can push more for that pipeline. So now we're kind of in the phase of, okay, now what? Are we gonna, the subcontractors are gonna want that excess capacity because they paid for the pipeline, and so are we gonna just split it 90-10 the way it is right now? Or are we gonna deal, we'll deal with maybe some result of this, groundwater being say, give us more wet water capacity in the pipeline in exchange for CCWA utilizing our excess allocation to help their reliability in dry years. So these are the kind of concepts that, we're going to be going through when we're trying to negotiate with CCWA on what to do with that excess capacity that's been identified. That kind of explain the difference? Okay. Where we're at?
Is the entire capacity to get off the most Santa Barbara centers at this point, is that deliverable to Colonial Pass? What's the size of the line coming there?
I believe it is. Is that last increment of Santa Barbara's?
I'm not quite sure about Santa Barbara, because they, instead of keeping the 25,000 like we did, they suspended a portion of their original allocation. Like, back in the 60s, we said, okay, we want 25,000 acre feet. Santa Barbara said 55,000 acre feet. I'm not quite sure what number it is. But, and then we got to the 90s where we're about to build the facilities. And so, UWR, when they were building the pipeline down the state, built the turnout for a future coastal branch for Santa Barbara and San Francisco. So, at Devil's Den, UWR stopped. And so, we have our 25,000 acre feet and our 55,000 acre feet to that point. And so then we designed the coastal branch in the 90s, I think it was 80s or 90s, and found all the people, okay, now who wants state water? We have this amount and this amount. And then all that said and done, it only added up to 48,30 and 44,000 for Santa Barbara. And so they sized the facility from Devil's Den to Colonial Pasture Water Treatment Plant. We only wanted 48,30 capacity, but Santa Barbara designed the pipeline to pump in off-peak times, and so there's some excess capacity in the pipeline between Devil's Den and Colonial Pass Water Treatment Plant in order to not pump during the high-peak times. So right now we're doing a capacity analysis to say, okay, well, how much, if we were to pump in the on-peak times, how much could we get through there, 24 hours a day? And so that's, we're evaluating that right now to see how much we could get to right before Colonial Pass Water Treatment Plant. And so the treatment plant was recently upgraded from a 52 million gallon a day to a 58 million gallon a day treatment plant. So that, in addition to the additional capacity that they found on the rest of the coastal branch, is going to be all part of this process and deciding what to do.
That additional on-peak time, that seems to me is going to take into account the additional cost, much higher cost.
That'll be a part of the analysis.
So now we have a sense of what our water supply availability looks like. And the question is, well, what is our groundwater recharge capacity? The two options are that we're looking at for the raw water right now is this agricultural and new opportunities and surface recharge opportunities. The ag and lieu opportunities are really based on the amount of the crop acreage, what the annual water demand is for the crop, and what's the monthly demand pattern for an individual crop, and what that looks like out in the basin. And then surface recharge opportunities, we're looking at both basin recharge and stream recharge opportunities. So first we're going to take a look at the ag and lieu areas. Take a look at the land use, the GIS land use mapping. Understanding this is a little dated, this is from 1997. This is from the last time when DWR did a land use survey of San Luis Obispo County. And if you know that there is more additional cultivation and irrigation along Highway 46, and I'm sure in other areas. But this gives us some sense of where are those cropping areas within the basin, and a sense of, well, where are they concentrated enough that it might be of interest or of value to explore any new recharge opportunities. The three areas that are identified are really in this area around Shandon, probably the Highway 46 corridor, this area here west of Whitley Gardens, and then an area north of Paso Robles here. So then the question is, well, what does this mean to us? If we take a look at two different crops, and what I've done, this is has includes vineyards and alfalfa on it, taking a look at the monthly variation in demand, what I did was say, okay, we're going to take a look, we have a monthly recharge goal of 1,000 acre feet a month, because that's the amount of water that may be available to us for banking. If we were going to try to recharge 1,000 acre feet per month using vineyards, which are in the purple bars here, how many acres of vineyards would we need to reach 1,000 acre feet of in-lieu recharge in that maximum month based upon its demand? So in June, when the grapes have the highest demand, it would take about 1,800 acres of grapes to provide for 1,000 acre feet of in-lieu recharge in that month. And so if we have 1,800 acres of vineyards. So if we have 1,800 acres of vineyards that are incorporated into an in-lieu recharge program, what is the total in-lieu opportunity over the course of a year associated with that 1,000 acres of vineyards? And you can see that's reflected by these purple bars here. And so over the course of a year, that would total about 4,100 acre feet of in-lieu recharge opportunity. So if we take a look at alfalfa, another crop that's present in the basin, has a much higher water demand and a longer irrigation season. Again, the same exercise, you can see that in green, the demand pattern for alfalfa, you see it would take about 1,500 acres of alfalfa to hit that threshold, that 1,000 acre foot per month threshold. They hit that in May, and over the course of the year, 1,500 acres of alfalfa would provide about 6,000 acre feet of in-lieu recharge. So that gives you some sense of what that capacity would look like. And based upon the number of acres that are available from the different crop types, will tell us what our total ag-lieu component is. And then one of the things to notice here, though, is that there's large periods of time where in-lieu recharge does not provide us any recharge capacity in numerous months out of the year.
I just walked in and
sure.
I look at those figures for table grapes or something.
Those were for vineyards from the, what is it, irrigation.
So Cal Poly.
Yeah, it was the Cal Poly report put out in 2003.
Publication.
Which estimates the evapotranspiration on a monthly basis.
Yeah, because those numbers look way off. I'm a farmer, I work with this all the time. You figure like, maybe you're like wine making out here, if you do it luxuriantly, maybe 2 acre feet per year per acre, where 4 is a minimum for alfalfa. Alfalfa's, you know, like when all your charts, were, whichever government agency, that's 1, and everything else is like 0.8, 0.5, or, you know, it's a fraction.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
well, I think, but see, one of the things that study included was the vegetative requirement for water, the soil evaporation requirement, and also
sure.
included the effective precipitation
sure.
from the area. So I think the alfalfa benefits early in the year from much more effective precipitation. So if that was not included, this would probably be a little bit higher.
But you're saying
I would double check.
Okay.
I could care less. I don't know what the charts tell me if they've walked in, but
okay.
just right now, all my bells are going, ding, 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 this is not bogus data.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You're suggesting alfalfa is 4?
Well, I mean, just.
Four
if,
or
right. If alfalfa is a really big water user.
Right. It's about, I mean, 54 inches or was it 4 to 6 feet
yeah.
or so.
Or what, like wine grapes are relatively small.
Right.
Water user. Table grapes.
But you're saying.
But,
wine grapes are more in the range of 2.
Yeah, 8 or 8 per year. If that was something that was looking under,
right.
who was really pumping the water to it from wine grapes, and this.
Well, that's not that far off.
But
yeah.
The alfalfa you're saying is 4 there, and grapes are just slightly over 2. I mean, maybe grapes.
Right. I think the grapes might be a little high.
Yeah, that's pretty close to what you're saying.
But this isn't. But
well,
I think we got that. This is not a comparison of. The ET or the consumption or applied water requirement of grapes versus alfalfa, because one of the things you take a look at though is that it takes 1,800 acres of grapes to have 1,000 acre foot of demand.
Yeah, I'm looking at that.
In that
yeah,
one, whereas in alfalfa, it only takes 1,500 acres to have 1,000 acre foot demand in a given month, which is May. So. I think that the way this information is presented may not clearly reflect the differences in the total of the water demands between the two crops, because it does.
Might ask somebody later who you trust, not me, just to have your numbers good. If you care about your numbers, check it out.
No, no.
Well, because the numbers I've heard is 4 acre feet for alfalfa and closer to.
Most of the guys, 1.5, 1.2.
For vineyards, so I would expect to see if alfalfa was 1,500, I would expect vineyards to be at least 3,000.
Yeah.
And figuring that June, they both, you know, is a fairly representative evapotranspiration month. I'm sure you've done a May cutting, so you're really pouring the water on the alfalfa, trying to get to grow in June. I don't know what vineyards do in June.
So we could take a look at the report afterwards if you want to talk about
yeah,
it.
Well, I'm just saying if you want to. I have a busy life.
Yeah.
Okay, so the in lieu is you're doing surface water deliveries and they stop pumping groundwater.
Correct. You're replacing groundwater pumping with a surface water supply.
So you're gonna have to do a distribution system
right.
piping too.
Right, and what the idea would be, because if that water supply is originating at a well, you would tie in that surface water supply to that location at the well and use the existing distribution system.
So you have to really service really large venues to make this
right.
possible.
And that's why if you take a look, the most opportunistic areas for agricultural in lieu would be in areas where there's a large concentration of crops together. So such as, you know, in the Shandon area here, or out here west of Woodley Gardens. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for ag in the land. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, most people out there on the well, so we talk about lots and lots of distribution.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that is one of the costs, one of the additional costs of an agricultural lending program. So if we go back and we take a look at we're satisfying a portion of our goal of 1,000 acre feet of recharge in every month with in-lieu recharge from vineyards, then if we're trying to get 1,000 acre feet in every year, we'll need to supplement that with additional recharge. And in which case, so we're looking at some surface recharge in the remaining months to try to get to the 1,000 acre feet per month. Because if we're going to build the rest of the infrastructure, the pipeline, to a capacity of 1,000 acre feet per month, we're going to want to utilize that as much as possible. So this kind of identifies that we do have periods of time when we do need to supplement our agricultural annual recharge with some basin recharge. So this is really just focusing in on what we've done is remove the in lieu recharge and identify more clearly that from October to March, we would be almost fully dependent on the surface recharge facilities to provide that recharge capacity. And then in the shoulder months, April, May, and August, and September, there would be, assuming that agricultural in lieu was the priority, there would be some sort of split or mix of recharge opportunities, and then that in the summer months, June and July, we could fully satisfy that goal with just agricultural in lieu recharge. But one of the things this chart really doesn't identify is that, you know, we're fully developing the recharge, the surface recharge necessary to recharge all of the water, because we're fully developing ponds or spreading basins at 100% of the capacity needed to recharge 1,000 acre feet a year. So if we would do that, then why would we consider adding additional cost of an in-lieu program as well? So, you know, that's something that we'll have to take a look at as we formulate these alternatives to see, well, is there a combination? Is direct recharge the best option? Or is it some combination of agricultural in lieu and direct recharge or surface recharge as well? So that's just something to think about if we go through this. Any questions on this? So then, the next thing we have, so we took a look at the ag in lieu opportunities. Then again, if we go back to evaluate what's the hydrogeologic feasibility of building those basins or using the existing stream system to recharge the groundwater system. Well, what are we looking at? You know, again, we've seen this slide before, looking at the geologic and hydrogeologic setting, surface conditions, you know, what's the total storage available, what's the ability to get water in and out of the aquifer system, you know, are there any other water quality considerations? One of the things from some of the existing work that's been done is that different groundwater sub-areas have been identified. And this is from the work that that Paul and Tim had done in the past. So if I misstep here, you know, to bring you back on track, the different groundwater sub-areas within the Paso Robles Basin include the Shandon area, or the Shandon sub-area, the San Juan sub-area, Preston sub-area, the Estrella sub-area, the South Gavilan, the North Gavilan, and then the Bradley sub-area as well. From some of the existing work that's been done, we have some generalized sense of, well, how does the hydrogeologic conditions vary across these different sub-basins? And so what I've done is just briefly summarize a couple of the characteristics of the different sub-areas. Understanding that this is generalized over the larger area and doesn't necessarily reflect the conditions at any specific location within the sub-basin. Even within the sub-basin, there's a lot of variability. But it does give you some sense of the amounts of aquifer storage that may be available in the different sub-areas. The thickness of the aquifers.
Yeah, just yeah, those are really, it's not the aquifer, it's the basin that
gets.
Okay. Aquifers are much, much less than most of the plain. So,
sure.
So it's
that's to the base of the
permeable sediments.
Permeable sediments, okay. See? That's why you're here, keeping on track.
What is specific yield?
That's a percentage of the rock that carries water. Say if you had gravel, it's the amount of water that's built in the saturated gravel that will drain out.
So I would have a bigger specific yield for a gravel bed than I would for a sand bed.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, it doesn't work exactly that way, but yeah. Variation depending on the type of sediments.
If you had a container filled with golf balls, there's a lot of space in between the golf balls compared to if you had a container filled with smaller marbles. The marbles pack more closely together, and so there's less space for that water to occupy. So you can see we've identified here the four basins, Estrella, San Juan, Preston, and Shandon, which we believe to have a greater recharge potential than the three other basins, the South Gavilan, North Gavilan, and the Bradley Basin. So then, again, generalizing, if we were going to take a look at where are those opportunities to provide surface recharge would be, we've roughly sketched out in this light green here where some of those areas might be for the greatest recharge potential. And again, if you take a look there along some of the creeks here in the San Juan area and at Preston area, and then out in the Estrella area as well, it's along the creek and within the basin. You know, one of the things to keep in mind here, we think about water banking, and there's a lot of water banking that goes on in Kern County. Kern County has a very large sandy aquifer system that's very, very thick, and portions of it very empty. So there's a lot of opportunity to recharge water both through surface recharge and through in-loop recharge, depending on where you are within Kern County. That environment does not necessarily exist in this sub-basin, so something we need to think about as we explore the water banking opportunities in the Paso Robles Basin is that it is a different animal than what's over in Kern County. So I think we just need to keep that in mind as we explore surface recharge opportunities.
So if we have to bring raw water in, that means a new pipeline. So I've heard that the existing state water right-of-way, the right-of-way was purchased for lots of pipes, and we only put in a few pipes. So essentially, we've got the right-of-way. It's just a matter of buying pipe and backhoes. Whereas if we went, say, put something out in Estrella, we'd have to buy right-of-way and pipe and backhoes. Is that it?
Each potential pipeline alignment may have different advantages and disadvantages.
But is there
right that the alignment for the existing coastal branch, we could probably piggyback on that and use that. Whereas if we go to somewhere else in the basin, we would have to get additional right of way. So that would be a big discriminator, or could be a big discriminator between alternatives. Any more questions? Yes.
I'm just curious, what's the relevance of the creeks that you show there under the sub areas?
Those creeks? Those creeks that are listed have stream bed characteristics that are favorable to recharge. So, for example, the mountains to the south here are granitic. And the material that comes off of those mountains is very coarse and sandy compared to some other areas.
So does that imply that there are no such creeks in the Estrella sub area?
We actually have
more.
Well, the Estrella River is, you know, would be.
Well, it's
could be listed. Could be listed there too.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
But it could be maybe the stratus such that it's not conducive to.
No, I mean the Estrella River could be listed in the same fashion that Shell Creek is there.
Yeah, and actually, I think our boundary does include the Estrella River.
Yeah.
That was just an oversight not getting it on that list or calling it out. So then the question is, well, okay, so we've identified areas where inlet opportunities may be available and where groundwater recharge may be available, surface recharge. And the question is, well, how do we get the water to those locations? One of the things that we've done is taken a look at an alignment towards the central part of the basin just to identify opportunities that may present themselves from the Colonial Pass Water Treatment Plant down along the coastal branch alignment and then along Highway 46 to Woodley Gardens.
See ya.
Just to give us some sense of, well, what are the opportunities and what are the costs and what are some of the things we need to consider just from a conveyance standpoint to move the water from the source to these different locations. And so one of the things we considered is, okay, what about if we go from the source to the edge of the groundwater basin? It's about 6.9 miles away. Or if we go from the source all the way down to Shandon, about 10 miles in length. Or if we go from the source all the way out to Whitley Gardens, about a total length of 18.4 miles. So some of the assumptions that we included in sizing the pipes and costing the pipes, where we looked at four different capacities, 500 acre feet a month, 1,000 acre feet a month, 1,500 and 2,000 acre feet a month, that cover a range of potential sizes or capacities that we may look at for a recharge project. Remembering that the 500 and 1,000 is available in most years, the 1,500 is available in about, 50% of the years, and 1,700 is available in 30% of the years. So the 2,000 acre feet a month actually goes beyond what is available with the existing supply that we're looking at. Then we looked at the pipelines and pump stations that would need to match the different flow requirements. We looked at two different material types, PVC and steel. And the example we'll take a look at here is using PVC pipe, and then assumed a 50-year project life for that. So if we take a look, and remember, this is just the cost to the capital cost to construct the pipeline from Colonial Pass to each of those different locations. This does not include additional recharge facilities or extraction facilities or delivery of water to an end user or treatment.
Or right
away. Or right away, yes. So if we take a look, we looked at three different options here: to the basin boundary, to Shandon, and to Whitley Gardens. And then we looked at the four different capacities. One of the things you notice, which is pretty evident, would be that as you increase the length of the pipeline, the cost goes up. And these costs are in dollars per acre foot of capacity, assuming that, you know, we're delivering, for example, 500 acre feet a month in every month for the 50-year life of that project. So we see that as the length gets longer, the cost gets larger to deliver that water a greater distance. But as we increase the size of the pipeline to a certain point, the unit cost for that acre foot comes down.
Because what's the size is that 1,500 pipe? Is that like
it's a 30 inch. I think the 500 I think was a 24, and these two were 30. The 1,000 didn't fully utilize the capacity. I think the velocity was on the order of 3 feet per second. I think at the 1,500 it was right about five. And then at 2000, I think that was 36. I think it was 36. I can't recall exactly.
How many gallons a minute are you doing? 2,400 gallons a minute there at 1,500?
Boy, you know what? I can tell you.
That's it. Something at least.
So then what we've done is added the O&M costs associated with that, and we can see because of the O&M operational maintenance of that, the costs increase some. But again, this tells us the cost to construct and operate the pipeline for a fixed supply. But we know from our other graph, this one, that we don't have 100% reliability of the supply in each of those conditions. Yes.
Did that include the cost of delivering the water to Paloma?
No,
this is just the system.
Yeah, this is just right, because that cost will be the same in
just
all the
$100.
Yeah. No. There's other costs. There's other costs associated with that. But this is really to get some sense of how alternatives, you know, how we'll discriminate between alternatives if it's near the source of the supply or if it's at a greater distance, and how large of the facilities we'll be constructing.
Question, if you get all the available water from the basin boundary, why would you go any further?
Well, because we don't have the opportunity to bank all that water at that location. Because if we put the water right here,
yeah,
there's really no place to store it. The aquifer just isn't suitable to store that, to receive that amount of water on a regular basis.
Oh, really?
And existing water there.
So you have to distribute it.
So, well, remember, we looked at both the agricultural in-lieu opportunities for recharge, mm-hmm. right? And so those will be concentrated where there's existing agricultural use. So a couple of those areas were right through here. There's significant crop use right in here. And so there's areas where that was concentrated. So there's a lot of groundwater use at those locations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one opportunity for recharge. And the other opportunity for recharge would be where there's hydrogeologic opportunities, because there's, you know, a thick aquifer and sandy soils that recharge as well. So we're either looking at the in-lieu, which would be replacing the groundwater supply with the surface water, or physically recharging the groundwater basin. And those opportunities really don't present themselves really in the whole Shandon sub-area, just because of the hydrogeology. It doesn't lend itself to an active recharge program.
So it's not like a bathtub where you put water in one end and shortly thereafter it's reflected on the other.
Yeah, no. The Shandon area doesn't provide those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But an in-lieu recharge, because of the hydrogeology, may provide an opportunity there.
I see that little finger that goes down to Santa Margarita. Is that part of the basin, that thing right there?
Right through here?
Yeah.
This is part of the
Pescadero
sub-basin. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So would any of the water that's recharged for places you mentioned have any impact at all, say down in Santa Margarita?
No.
Okay. You'd be hard pressed. You'd have to wait a long time.
I think water goes out of that thing, but it doesn't come in from the
other. Groundwater flows generally from the south to the north across the basin, from the southeast to the northwest.
Okay.
You know, any portion of this project really would have no impacts, benefits, or to the taxpayers, so
okay.
Now,
I
think I can leave.
Well, you to run that pipe right down the
street. Well, yeah, I'm interested.
You pour the water right there.
I'm interested in the pipe, yeah.
If you brought the pipe to the boundary line, to the basin line, put
right.
it into one of the existing streams down there.
Right.
While the Shandon Basin might not be perfect for recharge, if that water flowed down the stream, would it not
that would be one option that we could consider, and that was actually why I took that first reach just to the basin boundary there. Just to say, well, you know, if we want to take a look at maybe the least investment, you know, probably have very little return on that, especially as far as a banking operation. But if we just wanted to spill the water on the ground and, you know, whatever happened, that might be an option to do that, and then just let it wind its way through.
Could you calculate that? Do we know enough that you could actually calculate how that might distribute itself along the way?
Paul, what type of information do we have with it?
Given the...
yes, we could. There would be a lot of qualifiers in that kind of statement or analysis. You know, by putting water at that point into the streams, or into the stream, like Mike said, would have pretty minimal impact on the aquifer recharge, at least in the Shandon area, until it got, you know, farther out the Highway 46 corridor, down towards the gardens, before we really start seeing any impacts to the basin. There are some other, I mean, you know, obviously there are some benefits to that, particularly to the people that are right along the stream and could utilize it. There's certainly some environmental impacts with that create a live stream.
I was thinking in terms of a way to get it down to the depression and the ability to recharge in that depression area.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Yeah. You know, doing that, I mean, even if the Estrella River were based with a clay barrier, you know, it still flow out the Estrella down to Whitney Gardens and then head northward and would really, in large sense, bypass that area of declining water levels anyway. I mean, certainly it would have some benefit if that would work, but not as much as if we could somehow put the water directly into that area.
Where?
That'd be better than the Australia.
Yeah.
Yes.
No question about it.
And I think that idea of putting the water in the stream and letting it go, that's more of a recharge project, a recharge opportunity, as opposed to a water banking, because it would be difficult to account for that water and recover that water and deliver it to an end user. So that would be a project that would provide some benefit.
Well, I noticed you were looking at recharging and banking as two separate items on there, and it seemed to me that makes sense, because it may be that banking is not the answer here, that it may be more costly to go through a banking program than it would be to simply utilize that water and get it down to recharge some of the more needy areas, and it would also have the secondary benefit of protecting our water supply, state water supply. So.
And that might be a very viable option. I mean, that's definitely worth considering. And that was one of the purposes for that discussion of separating water banking from a recharge project.
Maybe you're going to get there, but it seems like putting it into creeks is pretty cheap, because you don't have to buy land for a recharge area. So you got to, seems like, balance that. You know, let's get a longer pipeline to a good creek like the Werwero, and the discharge facility would be pretty simple, as opposed to a complex settling pond that you have to grade every year or...
Yeah, but there's also other institutional and environmental considerations with letting a stream. So, you know, while it may be a very cost-effective approach, you know, what happens if you establish some sort of a wetland or riparian habitat, and then you're responsible for maintaining that into the future. So, you know, one of the things we'll take a look at is what are some of the environmental complexities of some
yeah,
of these
that,
opportunities.
That would make sense. And you can make some important signals.
No, indeed, those are the probably just came over here.
You're talking about $35 for instructions per acre foot at the $1,500 or the $500. You're talking about $125 for the, well, that's the 500.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're talking about $100 for the 1,000, and that's construction. And then another, what, $100 for OEM?
This is for the capital I know. And remember, this is really just to provide some context on this based upon those links.
Yep. Well, I think it's cheap water.
Well, there's more cost.
Yeah, there's more cost than this. This is just a convey it from that point to the application. There's also the cost of the water, all the costs that the county has incurred for their investment in the state water project and physically delivering that water to that location. So there's other costs involved. But see, those would be similar to any alternative.
Yes,
yeah. So this is really to discriminate between alternatives rather than a full cost. Was there any question?
No, I was just clarifying how this includes
So if we take a look, going back to our water supply availability chart again, we have our 1,000 acre foot, 1,500 acre foot availability, 1,000 acre feet, 80% of the time, at least 1,500 acre feet, 50% of the time, and 1,700 acre feet, 30% of the time. If we apply that to the different pipeline sizes that we've identified for these monthly delivery goals, we see that the range of the actual yield or the cost of the actual acre foot per water, this incorporates the availability or the uncertainty that's associated with the annual hydrologic conditions.
Because you're only going to be able to deliver that maximum such a short period over the course of that 50 or 20 years.
So for example, 1,000 acre feet a month is only available in 80% of the years.
And then what percentage of the year?
Well,
then even on that good year.
Yeah, there may be some, more.
It's only going to be 3 months or 4 months.
Yeah. Well, I think you can request your water.
They can divide it out.
Yeah.
They'll keep it.
Yeah, through the contract with the state, they're very committed to deliver it to you at a certain rate, which is identified in their contract. But everyone's contract, the amount that you actually get delivered goes up and down based upon what the hydrologic year is. So you know if everyone takes a 40% hit or a 30% hit,
then what they promised you in April might not be what's happening.
Well, they would. I mean, in April they'll know. But
yeah,
when you won't get your full 25,000 even if you request it. If everyone requested a full amount, everyone would get their full request less 30% if that's the actual amount of water that they have to deliver that year. So everyone shares in the payment. So what we see is at some point the actual cost of the water that can be delivered to the bank actually begins to increase and get more expensive because it's available less amount of time. So this is something that we need to consider in what is the real cost of that water. Then we're taking a look at that, the yield of the project. So this was really, I think, the point that we wanted to get to was to provide that insight So what we're going to do with this information is take a look and identify and refine, well, where are those in-lieu recharge opportunities? Where are those geologic or hydrogeologic recharge opportunities? What do they look like? And then match the facilities with those potential projects to see what are the best projects to evaluate in more detail as part of the study.
So, like, would you be identifying how much it would cost to deliver that 1,000 acre feet per year to, like, to Whitley Gardens?
Right.
You know, wherever you think it would be, you know, like, you know, where
right.
is the closest best shot to make where you just forage it?
Yeah, and it may be delivered into a stream or to an agglomerate recharge opportunity or to recharge basin. So
I can see the, you know, too bad more years of water and people's well sucking air over there. You can create the political will.
There'll be that improved interest.
Yeah, we could actually do some.
Yeah. So I don't know if there are any other questions.
Yeah, going back to the treated, I'm sitting here mulling this over in my mind. Going back to the treated capacity, the treated water. It seems to me that the demand for additional water comes in the dry years. And I was sitting thinking, if you've got 25,000 acre feet at Colonial Pass and you only get 30% delivery, you still have more than you can put into your pipeline, at whatever it is, 4,500 or whatever that capacity is for the pipeline. So you have 30% less in your pipeline that you have that excess capacity that you can move down the line. So theoretically, even in a 30 or 40% delivery year, you could still maximize your water down that pipeline.
Well, and that's not a problem actually for the county. What the county actually does to ensure that they will get the full amount of water that they need in any given year, they actually request more water than that, so that if there is going to be a cutback, they'll still have their full amount to provide to the individual purveyors. So they actually, on a year-by-year basis, they over-request what they think they will need in order so that when they do get cut back, they're still whole.
So isn't that because we're not delivering all the water to Colonial Pass?
I think that's more of an operational issue, because I don't know, do you pay for all the water that you request or what's actually delivered?
I think you pay for it ahead of time, and then they like reimburse you when you on the actuals at the end of the year.
We pay for the full 25,000, do we not?
You pay for the capital
fixed cost.
But you, the O&M, you only pay for that amount of water that you receive. So does that answer your question?
I'm still mulling it around.
That's one of the
scenarios. Mine has a long ways to go.
No,
there. I just mulled around in there.
That is one of the scenarios, is when we have that 25,000 feet, but for example, Santa Barbara CCWA doesn't. So when they're cut back to 30%, there is that excess capacity. And that's one of the scenarios, is for them to utilize our portion of the 25,000 to get it back up to 100% and thus utilize the rest of that capacity.
Yeah, you could deliver additional water to Santa Barbara in the existing pipeline. And you could charge them for some of the cost based on the fact that some of that capacity is ours.
Right.
And so that would seem to me to be a scenario that we'd want to look at.
Right.
For their supply.
Yeah. If in fact they're partners, which I understood they were very much interested in this whole process.
Yeah.
And that is another water management opportunity or strategy that presents itself between the two partners. So
I'd just be interested to see those different scenarios laid out. I'm still real interested in the one where you put the water into the creeks in North County and just recharge the basin that way. But it would be interesting to see those scenarios and see what the cost numbers are, how they fall out.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions?
What's the next day for?
May 3rd.
May 3rd.
Oh, before Paul leaves, I put Sue on the spot. She had a question about, I don't know if you could, it's too late to pull up the basin boundary.
Well, we have that map right there.
Oh, yeah. I think you kind of had a question about knowing the hydrogeologic characteristics, you know, just outside the basin and why you would not monitor or evaluate those characteristics. Is that for them?
Well, yeah, there have been some data gaps. I guess some areas aren't mapped. I mean, I know the area we're in is not mapped. I just had questions if there was kind of these more work on doing some additional mapping in some of those areas eventually, and what kind of ongoing monitoring is done. Something we can talk about at the next meeting.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you mean
on there? Up in the area that we're in, it doesn't show in the basin mapping. It's in some of the fractured shales that aren't really.
So you're outside the basin?
Yeah, we're outside the basin.
Oh, okay.
So
well, it's mapped. It's just not part of the basin, right?
Where's the map then?
Well, the map shows that you're not in the Tascadero groundwater basin.
Yeah.
There's a gap between the Atascadero subbasin and, you know, little.
I guess what I've been talking to Courtney about is that they're going to be in future work to try to map some of these other areas in our well defined.
Well, I think everything is absolutely well defined.
Oh,
okay. Now, just because it's not part of the basin like this doesn't mean that it's not mapped or that we don't know it. It's just not part of the basin. It's geologically, it's separate.
Like the water from those areas could pour into the basin, but you couldn't take a straw under your property and suck water back out of the basin.
Yeah, do we know what the storage capacity is in those areas and how much groundwater there is?
Well, no. For instance, this little peninsula of fractured rock or a consolidated rock here, no, in that sense, it hasn't been studied enough to say, okay, well, there's X thousands of or hundreds of thousands of acre feet of storage in that area and the yield is. No, that has not been done. No. And there won't be. Right? That's not going to get done. I can just say that because very few organizations ever will pay for detailed studies of these areas.
Did you get the data like of all the the oil guys that came and drilled all over the place in little tiny wells that they went very deep and
we have
they did all their
hundreds stuff. Of oil well logs and we looked at them in great detail. That's one of the means or the methods of identifying basin boundaries and depth of basin.
So some of those might, if she wanted to really pursue that database, she might find a little bit of stuff about what's under her.
Yeah, well, as far as the geology in the areas, that's all very well known.
Yeah.
Some of the water supply capability and characteristics of those areas are not as well known.
And the water supply versus the geology per se. And then the other question is on monitoring, we have the basin study. Is there going to be updates on that at some point?
Yeah, we're currently working on updating the change maps, 97 to current, as far as how it's changed in the last 10 years.
Are you sending that out?
What format are we doing? Actually, the resource management system and how we just had the board just approved the levels of area 1 in the Paso Basin and directed staff to do a resource capacity study. It'll be a part of that. So that will be eventually shared with the board. And we're supposed to come back to the board in 90 days from that date to tell them how we're going to go about completing that resource capacity study. So that's on my list to do.
Is material tonight going to
Yeah, that PowerPoint will put on the website. Do people use the website at all?
I don't know. It's kind of like it to
yeah.
It's
yes.
slowcountywater.org.
You change it a fair amount.
Yeah, you know, sorry, yeah, staying updated a lot. So I was, but we're very firm about keeping our slowcountywater.org, so you should be able to go there, and there's several links on the page, and it's underneath the integrated regional water management quick link on the side. And so you'll see our, the four plans that we got planning grants for, groundwater basins on the bottom, and all the stuff that we're working on is under there. It's a little bit varied, but hopefully it's logical. And you can see some other stuff along the way.
Yeah, there's a lot of information on there now.
Yeah, people, yeah. Good job. Well, everything on there. So it's like a good resource. We're done.
Oh, that might be there. I wanted to know, and my neighbor did.